Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Latino history goes back centuries and spans oceans and continents. How to encapsulate all that history? Latino scholar Ilan Stavans and political comic strip artist Lalo Alcaraz took the leap 25 years ago to produce Latino USA, a cartoon history. Now in its 25th anniversary edition, the book traces history from Columbus in 1492 to the 2024 presidential election. In between, it tells the story of the Spanish explorers who conquered the Aztecs, the Alamo, the complicated relationship the U.S. has with Cuba and Puerto Rico, the Chicano movement, 9/11, COVID-19. It shares the stories of the revolutionary artists who drew images of history and human struggles, and the writers who dared to go against the grain, often at the risk of their own lives. It also makes comments about history itself and its interpretation through time. We're talking today with Ilan Stavans, Lewis Sebring Professor of Humanities and Latin American and Latino Culture at Amherst College in Massachusetts. He explains how the collaboration with illustrator Lalo Alcaraz originated.
We had known each other for some time before we started working on the book, and we imagined a collaboration that would take us to unexpected places, that would push us individually as thinkers and artists and create something that neither of us alone could generate separately. That in itself was a thrill. It's like a tango. You depend on the movements of the other in order to figure out what your next step is. I personally wanted to steal away from historians the task that has been bestowed almost exclusively to them to chronicle, to retell the past. It should not be the domain of those that are exclusively trained, and properly so, to tell us where we come from. It should be an activity that all of us do in one way or another. And it should not be also, and probably more importantly, done with utmost seriousness. It should be responsible. It should be comprehensive. It should be intellectually weighty and pondered. But you can laugh with and at history, and that laughter, that humor, is therapeutic to understand what the mistakes have been. All of us have made mistakes. All of us will make mistakes. And the mistakes are there in order to be reapproached and re-understood. And laughter is a wonderful antidote. So Lalo and I wanted to create something that would bring in humor, that would be off-kilter when compared to what historians traditionally do. And last but not least, it would be a book for the general audience, not for a select few that already know the history and want a different take on it. It should be an effort to bring back the past in whatever form, in a multifarious symphonic way, to the people that produced it. Should not be the history of the leaders, of the celebrities, of the famous women and men that have led the past into the present and onto the future, but it should be by the people and for the people and with the people. And we wanted to do something that was utterly accessible, imagined for elementary schools and middle schools, for workers and for pizza delivery folks and for mothers and teachers, for everybody who would be interested in finding out who they are and how is it that they have become that individual.
You write in your foreword a really great story of your being introduced to Mexican comic books, and I remember reading a few of those. It might have been a little racy for a young child to be reading some of those comic books, but I'm wondering how those might have influenced this particular book of Latino history.
I am an immigrant, born and raised in Mexico, specifically in the southern part of Mexico City, who came of age in the 60s and early 70s, where Mexican culture was undergoing a dramatic transformation, having been monolithic one-party dictatorship, the ruling party, Partido Revolucionario Institucional. It was beginning to crumble. There were movements led by workers and led by students that wanted a more democratic, pluralistic, open society. And one of the ingredients in that transformation was the desire to use elements from popular culture to look at the life of the mind and art in different and maybe even subversive ways. In the corner of my neighborhood, Copilco, there was a newsstand that I would go religiously every Friday to spend my weekly allowance in comic strips that were arriving both from the United States, Archie and Sabrina and Batman and Superman and other superheroes, and Mexican products that became really important and were equally made of comic strips, graphic stories. They were sometimes arriving only from Mexican producers, and others were coming from Uruguay and Chile and other parts of Latin America. I'm talking about Condorito and La Familia Burrón, and a superhero that was crucial to me, Calimán, that was a Mexican creation, an individual who had some special powers as they connected with the Egyptian past. And there was also Mafalda, the great Argentine little girl, who would always question the political landscape with irony and cynicism. I loved all these products. I would wait desperately for the next Friday to arrive. And among the items that were sold at the newsstand were also some items that I didn't appreciate that much at the beginning, but eventually grew on me and became my favorites. They were produced by a man called Rius, Rius, and they were the forerunners of what would become Marx for Beginners, or the Catholic Church for Beginners, or Capitalism for Beginners, microhistories. In the spirit of what we know today as Wikipedia entries, that would tell you a lot in a very playful way through collages of images that came from all sorts of backgrounds, all sorts of sources. I doubt that Rios was paying permission to use many of them, but they were mostly irreverent takes on very important topics that affected us all. And when I decided to embark on Latino USA, a cartoon history, I, in conversations with Lalo Alcaraz, mentioned the works by Rius, and I suggested that in that spirit, in the spirit of informing and entertaining and subverting some truths, that the illustration and the printed word should go hand in hand, sometimes one taking the lead in the page, pushing the narrative forward, and sometimes switching sides with the other one. It's an enchanting, sublime effort to play with those two modes, with those two tools, the image and the word, when you are a straightforward writer, like I am most of the time, an essayist or a poet or a fiction writer. What you have at your disposal is exclusively the written word, and you build universes with it. But when you're creating a graphic novel or a cartoon history like this, you have that other palette that is made of icons, in graphs, in all kinds of illustrations. And you need to figure out how not to repeat yourself, not to undermine what the illustrations are already doing. So I learned a lot with Lalo Alcaraz on how Rius created this, sometimes shaping a script and then adding the images, or maybe having the images first and then adding the script. It is, in any case, it's very stimulating to produce something that will be seen and read at the same time.
Ilan Stavans is a critic, editor, author, academic, essayist, and translator. He's the co-author of Latino USA, A Cartoon History. The book's illustrations are by Lalo Alcaraz, a Los Angeles-based artist known for his often biting political comics. When we come back, how deep can you go when retelling over 500 years of Latino history in comic book form?
Can you do all that in 200 plus pages? Well, certainly not, and certainly yes.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Latino USA, A Cartoon History, is an approachable, honest, and all-encompassing collection of illustrated panels that tell five centuries of history that explains who Latinos are in the Americas and how we came to be, and how that history has been interpreted over the centuries by conquerors and historians. One panel in Latino USA shows three of the book's recurring narrators in a TV talk show setting. The toucan questions whether the Latino civil rights era was a success and whether Chicanos and Puerto Ricans won it. The maestra, teacher, responds, "This isn't about winning." The calavera, skull, who's in the host chair, says, "Oh, yes, it is." The comic's author peeks through a peeled-away corner of the panel to comment, "What is it that one wins in history?" That author, Ilan Stavans, created Latino USA 25 years ago with Los Angeles-based illustrator Lalo Alcaraz. It's been reissued with additional pages for its 25th anniversary edition. Stavans says the recurring narrative characters, who also include the beloved Mexican comedian Cantinflas and wrestler El Santo, serve as anchors who question this history in their own individual ways.
They are deliberately stereotypical. We Latinos have been perceived by the outside world and by ourselves through the prism, the lens of stereotypes on the one hand and lazy thinking images on the other. Very often when one would see the covers of novels that belong to magical realism produced by García Márquez and Vargas Llosa and Julio Cortázar, they would always have a toucan on the cover, or a butterfly, or the jungle, or a prostitute and a forgotten military figure. I wanted to play with this icons. I wanted to add new ones. Say, Cantinflas has been a hero of mine, arguably the most popular comedian, stand-up comedian, we would call it today, of the golden age of Mexican cinema in the late 1930s, 1940s, had something that was absolutely unique, often being compared to Charlie Chaplin. He had something that was his own, and that was the capacity to reorganize a chaotic world through words, words that would be themselves incredibly chaotic. And when we say in Spanish cantinflear, it means that we are using language to create a discombobulated reality that will confuse those that are listening to us. So I wanted to bring in a character like that and contrast it with a character of a teacher who will be offering more measured, calibrated comments. But mostly the role of those characters is to invite the reader not to take anything that we are often given about the past by historians on face value, to question it, to be critical. The past is not there to be simply read. It's there to be questioned, to be rethought, to reanalyzed. And that is what those characters want to do.
And the history that you do include in these 200 some odd pages, I mean, it is incredibly vast and varied. You have a lot of history here, not just about Mexico, which is something that, you know, people living here where I am in San Antonio might be more familiar with, but you include histories of Puerto Rico, of Cuba, of the Dominican Republic, of Central America, of South America. It really is a Latin American history. And so how was it that you were able to pick and choose what you wanted, sort of in this chronological order, to condense all that into this volume?
At the core of your question is that central topic. What is it that makes us Latinos? Are we simply a sum of parts? Are we Mexicans and Dominicans and Cubans and Puerto Ricans, all in separate lines, living concurrent lives? Or do we all belong to the same tradition? Do we share elements? Do we have bridges that connect us? Do we have something in common? Is it language? Is it religion? Is it a shared past? The book doesn't want to answer these questions. The book wants to present them in a way that will provoke the reader. And when we say we are the Latino community, the Latino minority, the Latino population in the United States, roughly about 65 million people, an astonishing number by any measure, what we're saying is that we have roots all over the world, and certainly all over Latin America and certain parts of Spain and Northern Africa. And if we truly want to understand our past, we at least have to make an effort to understand those elements that define that past. And the fact that every single nation in Latin America is represented in the United States and within the Latino community suggests that we have to make that effort to understand what were the Argentinians thinking and what were the Dominicans and the Colombians. So can you do all that in 200 plus pages? Well, certainly not, and certainly yes. You can suggest elements, you can be playful, and you can serve hors d'oeuvres for readers to pick and choose so that they will be inspired to go farther and deeper. Any history, no matter how small the subject, is in itself a quixotic act. You can't really recreate fully, completely, that subject. There is always something that is going to be left out because the past is not fully recoverable. And with that premise, with that recognition that you are doomed from the beginning, you can have a more relaxed approach and bring in material from all kinds of backgrounds and then let the reader go on a journey by themselves.
I will admit you did send me on a Google search more than once when reading this book.
Google is now the equivalent of the boat that Columbus took, the three carabelas, in crossing the Atlantic.
Well, looking back, you have updated this book in its 15-year anniversary, in its 25th year now since it came out, and you've been sort of adding pages to it since. I'm curious, not talking about the new pages that you've added, but sort of looking back at what's already been written in Latino USA, A Cartoon History, is there anything that you maybe wish you could have gone back to revise? Maybe something that worked 25 years ago maybe doesn't have as much resonance today? And I'm thinking, you know, the winds of change in language tend to change with every generation.
I can't tell you how much I appreciate that question, Norma, because in going back to a book that one did 25 years ago and going back to a book periodically, as you said, the publisher decided to bring it out again with added pages when it turned 15, and now that it turned 25, a quarter of a century, one inevitably not only adds material, but looks back at the material. And none of us is ever static. None of us is ever complete. So I have often felt the temptation to revise arguments that I made in the earlier pages, to update them, to expand. And that temptation has, in a very subtle, delicate, and maybe silent way, has seen just minor affectations in the earlier pages. It's not so much that I changed what I was thinking because I wanted to respect who I was 25 years ago. The person, the Ilan Stavans of 25 years ago, has evolved, hopefully for the better, but it's certainly in a different direction. And even having the Ilan Stavans in the year 2000 and the Ilan Stavans in 2025 talk to each other, there might be lots of things that they don't see eye to eye, or they have become impatient with each other. So I have done silent amendments, not in order to censor my earlier self, but to allow for certain comments that are going to come up later on that would sit more comfortably on the page. I don't know if the Ilan Stavans of the year 2000 would have disagreed the way I disagree with the X that has entered our vocabulary, as in Latin X, or with the ampersand that some of us also use to say Latino, Latina, Latines. I suppose that Ilan Stavans was much more welcoming to that kind of verbal transformation. It is said that the older we become, the more cantankerous we might be, or even more conservative. I don't know if I have become more conservative in terms of language. I haven't, but I certainly have felt what it means to insert an alien, in my mind, a foreign letter into expressions that feels like a needless addition. My view, actually, the Ilan Stavans of today, is that in many ways, the move of the Latino voting bloc, if there is such a thing, and I myself doubt it, at least portions of it, in the direction of the Republican Party and in the direction of Donald Trump, has in part, even if it's a small part, to do with that affectation of the X that feels, even for people who are very liberal, like me, woke and unnecessary. So the book needed to reflect not only the changes and the tensions of those changes in those hundreds of years, but the tensions of those changes within each of us, certainly within me and within other characters who have changed over time. The maestra at the beginning of the book is not the same as the maestra at the end of the book. Even Cantinflas has different opinions. We all grow, hopefully again for the better, but I'm not always sure that there is such a thing as progress in human evolution.
Well, to kind of shift gears, this is not the first time that your words have been paired with illustrations. And you were saying earlier, it seems like it's just a really fantastic way to be able to connect with maybe a different audience. Can you explain how you began working with illustrators for your works?
I love that relationship. In part, it has to do with the conviction that we are abandoning, as a civilization, the written word exclusively as such. And we are entering a stage where the image has a bigger, more influential role. You see that in the ubiquity of Netflix and Hulu and Hollywood, in the emergence and consolidation of graphic novels, in the power of television as a whole. But even in a more modest way, when you go to an airport, you can easily find the bathroom without knowing the word men or women or hombres, mujeres, with the icons that culturally we now use in those hangars or in those terminals or on the streets. There is an enormous effort, in part because of the diversities of language that we live in, to move in the direction of having icons that are language neutral, so to speak. And so I have adored being a child of and a frequent reader of those comic strips, and having grown up with the Cantinflas and with El Chavo del Ocho in television and being a film buff, I love what the moving image does on the screen, on the page. And I love collaborating with artists that think in images. I have a brother who thinks in musical terms. He's a musician. I think in words, I think in ideas. And many of the collaborators that I have that in the graphic novels have been individuals who I admire tremendously, who think visually. And that is, to me, an extraordinary invitation when one collaborates. How to see things and not necessarily explain them. It is the old division that Henry James, the 19th century American writer, would establish between showing and telling. I can tell you a lot of things through my words, but the visual artists show things directly. And so the effort of a graphic novel is to find a balance between the showing and the telling. And the happier the marriage between those two, the illustrator and the writer, when they are two, it's often that it's a single individual, as in the case of, say, Art Spiegelman in Mouse. When it is two, there's that possibility of enchanting, inciting, reinventing the other by allowing them to tell you what your words or what your images are only doing partially. And those words or images are going to be rounded up or more wholesome when they partner with the other side.
And sometimes even a perfectly drawn image or a photograph will tell you more about what you want to communicate than actual words.
Absolutely. And there's something added to all this, Norma, and that's, you know, I'm very interested in how art ages. When you see a movie from the 1950s and another one from the 1980s, you inescapably will register how that age saw itself and how we no longer see ourselves as that. A movie ages much faster than a written text. Cartoons age differently because they don't want to be realistic. They want to be playful. They age nonetheless, but the natural process is different. And when you connect that with the written word, maybe a word will have lost its meaning. Words are always in a state of change and of transformation. And a word used in a particular period might mean something totally different 20 years later or 50 years later. A cartoon might live more comfortably in its time, especially when it's in a kind of more deliberately basic, or even, I'm going to use the word, primitive way, like some of the cartoons in Latino USA. But I like that because the book ages maybe in content or maybe not. Everything ages, but it ages differently than other forms of visual representation.
Well, speaking of aged words, I was looking that your next project is dealing with a poet who lived over 600 years ago. Can you maybe give us a preview of what that is going to be?
Of course. I have been studying Nahuatl in part because I feel a need to reconnect to the roots of my past. The only poet of the pre-Columbian past in the Aztec Empire or the Mexica Empire that we know by first name is Nezahualcoyotl. He died about 50 years before the arrival of the Spanish conquistadors and is an icon in Mexican history. There's an entire and very populous neighborhood called Ciudad Nezahualcoyotl. I wanted to go back to this individual who, aside from being a poet, was a king and was an urban planner and was a philosopher, and recreate, not translate, recreate, retell the poems that are attributed to him. He did not likely write them himself. Like King David in the Bible or King Solomon, there was a cohort in the court that would write the king's poetry. Likely that is also what happened in the court of Texcoco surrounding Netzahualcoyotl. And I brought back through these retellings a number of his poems, adapted them, and in so doing, tell his life just before this cataclysmic event that is about to happen, the arrival of Europeans that will decimate the Aztec Empire and will push the Americas into modernity. It is exquisite in terms of vision, what Netzahualcoyotl was saying. And some of the chroniclers, the Spanish chroniclers, believe that he was himself a subversive figure that was against sacrifices to the deities and in favor of a single monotheistic god rather than having a plurality of idols. Is that wishful thinking by the Spaniards? Most likely. And in my own reimagining of Netzahualcoyotl, there's also wishful thinking that is impossible to eliminate when one is going to the past. But I feel a kindred spirit in him. And I hope these poems, the collection is called Lamentations of Netzahualcoyotl, will allow readers to get a taste of the very sophisticated, nuanced mind of this king, poet, warrior who believed he, like us, was living in a crucial time that would not be seen again in history.
And I'm sure it will not surprise listeners to know that it will also include illustrations.
Exactly, by a Nahuatl artist who lives in Veracruz, Cuauhtémoc Huitzca. I am thrilled to have collaborated with him, and he does remarkable recreations of some of the images in the poems.
Ilan Stavans is co-author with illustrator Lalo Algaraz of Latino USA, A Cartoon History. The book was first published in 2000 and was reissued with new entries in 2015 and again this year for its 25th anniversary. Stavans is the Louis Sebring Professor of Humanities and Latin American and Latino Culture at Amherst College in Massachusetts. He's the author of various books, is the publisher of Restless Books, and is a consultant to the Oxford English Dictionary. Thanks for joining us today for Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Maria Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.